Hello, and you're listening to Eco Justice Radio here on 90.7 KPFK. My name is JP Morris, and today we have an interview hosted by Jessica Aldridge. She'll be talking to Melissa Bumstead. Melissa Bumstead is a local advocate and mother of 8-year-old Grace Ellen, who is a 2-time cancer survivor. After her daughter's diagnosis in 2014, Melissa started the change.org/Santa Susana petition that has over 500,000 signatures and began the grassroots group Parents Against Santa Susana Field Lab. Jessica will also be talking to Denise Duffield. Denise directs the PSRLA's Nuclear Threats Program, which advocates for health protective policies related to nuclear weapons and nuclear energy. She leads PSRLA's efforts to assure a full cleanup of the Santa Susana Field Laboratory, efforts that the organization has been involved for over 30 years. So let's get on with this amazing interview we have for you guys. You're listening to Eco Justice Radio 90.7 KPFK.
Welcome, listeners. This is Eco Justice Radio and 90.7 KPFK. I am Jessica Aldridge from SoCal 350 and Adventures in Waste. We have a very powerful show today. Recently, I was moderating a panel, and I fielded a question to the audience. I asked them by a raise of hands, how many of you do not know that only 30 miles northwest of downtown Los Angeles, we experienced one of the largest nuclear meltdowns in United States history? 90% of the hands in the audience went up. They had no idea. In the 1940s, the Santa Susana Field Laboratory was developed for nuclear research and weapons testing. In 1959, it suffered an uncontained partial meltdown of at least one sodium reactor, referred to by experts as the worst nuclear disaster in U.S. history. Until 1979, the incident and the toxic waste byproduct that still pollutes the groundwater, the air, and the soil was kept secret. When plastic pollutes our streets and our waterways, there is a movement for better management and cleanup. But what of the waste that we cannot see with the naked eye? What if the waste is a human carcinogen made airborne through dust, groundwater runoff, and fires? Who is responsible for the cleanup? What happens when neighboring communities suffer higher rates of cancer and other illnesses? What of transparency? Recently, climate change helped to fuel the Woolsey Fire that decimated almost 10,000 acres, starting at the Santa Susana Field Laboratory and spreading all the way to the Pacific Ocean. When the fire raged over the land, it created a toxic airborne soup of particulate matter. Our show today is called Nuclear Waste, the Los Angeles Meltdown and Cover-Up. Our guests are leading advocates for a safe and healthy community and the appropriate cleanup of the Santa Susana Field Laboratory toxic waste. It is my pleasure to welcome Denise Duffield, Associate Director of Physicians for Social Responsibility Los Angeles, and Melissa Bumstead, mother and local advocate and founder of Parents vs. Santa Susana Field Laboratory, or SSFL. Thank you, ladies, for both being here.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you. Denise, and I think I just said your name wrong, but Duffield.
Duffield, yes.
Yes. Denise, I want to start with you and, you know, setting up that background of what's taking place. But first, what is the purpose of Physicians of Social Responsibility, and how long has the organization been around?
Physicians for Social Responsibility Los Angeles was founded in 1980 as a local chapter of the national organization, Physicians for Social Responsibility. We're the largest chapter in the country. Our organization's mission is to protect public health from nuclear and environmental threats.
And in my introduction, I briefly mentioned the Santa Susana Field Laboratory and the nuclear meltdown. Can you briefly set up that backstory? I mean, most people really have no idea that this happened.
Yes, as you mentioned, the Santa Susana Field Laboratory began operations in the late 40s. By 1957, they had the first reactor to provide commercial nuclear power fired up, and the city that received that nuclear power was Moore Park, and there was a lot of fanfare at the time. 2 years later, however, that reactor suffered a partial meltdown. 13 out of 43 fuel rods melted down. The power level started to rise. The workers didn't really know what was going on. They turned it off, and then they turned it back on again for another full 13 days. and when the radiation would increase in the space they were in, they released it. They vented radioactive gases into the atmosphere, which went over both the Simi and the San Fernando valleys. And then over the years, they had ten nuclear reactors there. Two others suffered accidents. There was a hot lab where they would reprocess highly toxic spent nuclear fuel from around the country. They had fires at that hot lab. There was open-air burning of radioactively contaminated reactor components. There was a plutonium and uranium carbide fabrication facilities on site. So there were a lot of nuclear activities on site that resulted in the contamination that we still have today in the soil and the groundwater. In addition, there were tens of thousands of rocket engine tests that resulted in very significant chemical contamination with perchlorate, trichloroethylene. There's dioxins, there's heavy metals, lead and mercury. There's some very exotic chemicals, monomethylhydrazine, and more that still widespread contaminate that site today.
And how close are we from cleaning up the site, or has the site been cleaned up?
Oh, that's the however many years, decades-long question. The site is not cleaned up. There have been a few interim measures. However, it is still contaminated. In 2010, the California Department of Toxic Substances Control signed historic agreements with two of the responsible parties, the Department of Energy and NASA, to clean up their sites to background, which meant that they spent $40 million on a survey to figure out what was the background level of contamination in the area. Radiation that was there pre-existing before the accidents occurred. And the idea was to make it simple, just clean up what was above background. Boeing, which owns most of the site, did not sign that agreement and has instead been pushing for a much weaker cleanup. But that key agreement said that the cleanup would be done by 2017. The cleanup has not even begun. And now, at the same time, they're talking about a deadline of 2034, while at the same time entertaining proposals that would leave up to 90% of the contamination on site.
So we had a meltdown in 1959. They found out about it in 1979.
Correct.
We're in 2000, and we could, 1819, and there's no cleanup in sight. Melissa, you are a mother and a local advocate. You live in a neighborhood adjacent to the Santa Susana Field Laboratory. Your story and involvement is a personal one. Do you mind telling our listeners about your personal journey and how you became an activist in all of this?
Certainly. My daughter was 4 years old when she started bruising horrifically all over her body. We took her to Children's Hospital Los Angeles and found out she has an incredibly rare and aggressive form of childhood leukemia. We spent over 100 days in the hospital that first year, and the amount of chemotherapy she needed for her type of leukemia was 10 times over the regular dose that is given to other leukemia patients. It was through this process of just being in the hospital and friendly conversation with other parents there that I started to find out many of the other families in this world-renowned hospital that serves over 4 million people, they were my neighbors. And that was alarming because childhood cancer is exceptionally rare. There's only 15,000 new cases of pediatric cancer diagnosed in America out of 72 million children. So the odds of finding people who lived by me, it was frightening. I just tried to ignore it and just chalked it up to coincidence. And then I would meet another family, and little by little, my coincidence theory was taken down to nothing until I realized there's something really wrong. So we started to map ourselves out and shared information on a Facebook group, and we had this big ring of families, and we said, that's really odd. Well, what could be in the middle? There's got to be a link. And that's the first time I had heard about the Santa Susana Field Lab, even though we had lived only 5 miles away.
And how did you find out that someone in the group had said something or brought it up?
Somehow, one of the moms, there were seven of us to start out with, one of the moms heard about it. And again, we kind of said, well, it couldn't have been that nobody talks about that. How would they let people live so close to something that dangerous? So we kept saying, no, 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 it can't be. But one of these moms heard about a public forum that they were having about the Santa Susana Field Lab from the Department of Toxic Substance Control. It was a three-hour meeting with charts and numbers and statistics. And I'm being really serious here. At the end of that meeting, they said all of these numbers were hypothetical today.
Wow.
And that's when I knew something is wrong. Something is really wrong.
And have there been health risk assessments conducted? And if so, what have these findings, what's been the result?
Well, we have the very, very highly respected Dr. Hal Morgenstern. He conducted a study, an epidemiological study, of trying to find out people living within 2 miles of the site at the time of the study had a 60% higher cancer incident rate. And then when he took it to 5 miles, he found less of a cancer rate, which indicates that the closer you get to the site, the more risk you have. We also found out totally independently of I don't think this study had even SSFL on their radar, but then California Breast Cancer Mapping Project happened to show our area had a 10 to 20% higher invasive breast cancer rate than the rest of California.
Has there been any compensation by the Santa Susana Field Lab, by Boeing, in regards to health assessments?
There had been a class action lawsuit happened some years ago. I believe it was a $30 million payout. However, I know many of the people who were part of that who were very unhappy with it. They felt that the lawyers took the bulk of the money. They did not get nearly enough to cover their illnesses. And a lot of the material was then sealed. So a lot of important documentation that we would love to see is now not available to us.
They were also asked to sign gag agreements. They're not allowed to speak about it. So the people who had the best chance of showing that their cancers were related to the site are now not allowed to speak about it publicly, including the cluster of children with retinoblastoma, which is another extremely rare form of eye cancer that 11 children had. And I had never even heard of them because, again, in order to pay their medical bills, they had to sign a gag order. It just doesn't seem fair to have to choose between protecting the public and making sure your family could survive, but that's what they were forced to do.
Yeah. If you are just tuning in, you are listening to EcoJustice Radio and 90.7 KPFK. We are here with Denise Duffield from Physicians for Social Responsibility Los Angeles and Melissa Bumstead, mother and local advocate. So, Denise, before we have been speaking offline, that last year there was at least 25 media stories regarding the meltdown, the health effects, that we need cleanup. How is it that people are still unaware, people living in Los Angeles, but in that area, that still have no idea that this meltdown took place?
If I knew the answer to that question, maybe we wouldn't be here. The Ventura County Star covers it regularly. The Los Angeles Daily News covers it regularly. NBC Los Angeles has done a wonderful job, a multi-year investigative series that's ongoing that started in 2015, I believe. And the Acorn, the local papers, the Acorn run stories. So I don't quite know.
Is it part of their rental agreement, or when you buy a house there, is this disclosed?
I had a two-sentence clause in my mortgage paperwork, and when I saw it, and that kind of shocked me because I'd never heard of it before, and I said, what is this? And the lady said, oh, don't worry about that, honey. It's just something they have to put in there. It doesn't bother anyone anymore. So I feel like our community, it's somewhere in between the skeleton in the closet and the elephant in the room. People who know about it are too scared to talk about it because then you have to admit that daily you're exposing your family to something horrific, or it becomes a skeleton in the closet where either nobody knows about it because we do have a lot of new, younger families moving into the area. But also, again, it's terrifying to have to admit that your government agency is not protecting you. Everyone says, well, if it was safe, why do they let people live here? Well, they shouldn't have.
Yeah.
And that's so frightening that people hide from it.
And these toxic contaminants, these substances, this waste, it's making its way, it sounds like it's making its way into the surrounding environment, or is it actually staying on site? And what are these substances that are so dangerous potentially to our groundwater and our soil and our air?
Another study that in 2007, Dr. Yoram Cohen and a team of researchers, also multi-year investigation, looked at the potential for off-site migration from the site, and they studied all of the various pathways. And the study concluded that, in fact, contamination from Santa Susana does migrate off-site at levels over EPA levels of concern. Strontium 90 has been found in Runkle Ranch by would-be developers, perchlorate in Amundsen Ranch. Contamination has been found in Brandeis Bardeen and in Bell Canyon. So, and the pathways, a lot of it nowadays would be windborne when we have wind or rain events in particular that causes the contamination to migrate.
And dust, too, right? They're thinking of turning the area over there into a place where people can hike. And
that's where the wind-related migration takes place, is in the dust. In addition, the surface water runoff has Santa Susana contamination. Boeing's been fined over $1 million for exceedances in the surface water runoff. And the groundwater also has incredible contamination.
And is this groundwater in that Simi Valley, do all of these apply? Simi Valley, Chatsworth, Canoga Park?
Well, I believe it affects Simi the most. They have an incredibly low groundwater table. So the Chatsworth aquifer is horrifically, I mean, the numbers are astounding, thousands of times over EPA recommendations. So when it starts to rain really hard, it can actually reach the aquifer and have it seep up to the surface. So I'm very concerned about people in Simi Valley, and also some of the people in Simi Valley drink Golden State water, and that is actually mixed with well water. So they're directly exposed to the contamination of the groundwater there.
Over a third of the wells in Simi Valley are contaminated with perchlorate.
Wow. And, you know, we're talking about the dust and the migration, the wind migration of this. And on November 8th, the Woolsey Fire ignited and burned 96,949 acres of land. It destroyed 1,643 structures and unfortunately killed three people. Where did the Woolsey Fire start? Because original reports seem to say that it was on the site, and now it's saying it's near the site and it's not really related to the site.
The fire started on the property of the Santa Susana Field Laboratory, and it does drive me a little nuts when I hear near Santa Susana. The CAL FIRE initially said E Street and Alpha Road. E Street and Alpha Road is on the Santa Susana property. Then we had a couple days later in the news that there had been a disturbance at the Chatsworth substation about 2 minutes before the fire started. The Chatsworth substation is located on the Santa Susana Field Lab property. In fact, it was there built originally for that first reactor that melted down. Additionally, we have seen aerial overheads from the very beginning of the fire from Stu Mandel, and that's one of the photos that's now gone viral. So if you put together E Street and Alpha Road, that's on the site. You look at the aerial photograph from Stu Mandel and the notification about the Chatsworth substation, it's very clear that the fire began on the site itself.
And it was stated publicly somewhere that Santa Susana Field Laboratory said that they were working with LA County and Ventura hazmat teams to test for radiation. Is that true?
I actually personally called the Ventura County hazmat, and their captain was on the field. And when I was speaking to the station, the firefighters, some of them had never heard of the Santa Susana Field Lab. I had one firefighter taking notes as quick as he could and said, this could be dangerous to us. We're out there on the field. And I let him know that's exactly why we care so much. We don't want anyone to be hurt by this. And the firefighters were in no way given protective gear to deal with a potentially nuclear waste fire. And so when I talked to the captain through the Ventura County Hazmat at Station 50, he said definitively they had not worked with the DTSC. Then I contacted a captain at the LA Fire Department, and he also said, that's not even something they can do. That's not something they ever do. And on the next community update that the DTSC put out, they were no longer mentioned as the where they received that information.
And are they testing right now for radiation?
So what we've been told is that they tested, first of all, on the site, which is incredibly not useful. That's not where people live. And then they did some testing after the fires between November 11th and 14th is what we're told. That, too, is not terribly helpful. The greatest risk was actually during the fire, although it is possible, I know we'll talk about this in a minute, that radioactive, that there's ash that has contamination. So they've done some testing. However, they will not release the information that is the most important to us, which is what was tested, when was it tested, where was it tested, what equipment was used, what were the detection limits of those equipments. If they said that there was no radiation, no discernible radiation, is what the Department of Public Health said, that's not possible anywhere in not just on the planet, but in the world. There's always background radiation. That didn't inspire confidence. And right now, we believe they're going to be putting together a report. And I think the reason they're taking so long is that they have to massage that data, massage the background levels, whatever it is, because there's no way that they would tell the community 10 hours after the fire started that there's no risk and then come out a month later and say we were wrong.
So we have about 5 minutes left, and I want to make sure that we get into what does a cleanup of the site look like? Is it going to stay on site? Is it transport off site? And then also solutions. So can we start with what does a cleanup look like?
It's largely removing. At this point, we're talking about soil remediation, which is removing the contamination at its source in the soil. And there are some provisions for some phytoremediation, some in-situ treatment is also part of the plan. However, the sad part about our environmental messes that we've created in this country is there really is no such thing as a cleanup. It's almost always taking contamination and separating it from the environment somewhere else, hopefully a place, in this case, that's licensed for low-level radioactive waste.
And what does a solution look like? I mean, besides the cleanup, what needs to happen to ensure that the site is cleaned up and that they honor their contracts and no way for them to maneuver around their social and environmental responsibilities?
Well, I'll just throw in real quick what a cleanup shouldn't look like. And that's what Boeing tried to do back in 2013. Surrounding the plutonium reactor and the actual reactor itself, they shipped it to Simi Valley recyclers. They sent it to Sunland for metal recycling. This is contaminated waste that they in no way should have had into any facility that was not specifically licensed for low-level radiation waste. And that's what they were starting to call the cleanup. Thankfully, Physicians for Social Responsibility, Committee to Bridge the Gap, several other groups got involved and sued to stop that. That is not the cleanup that is going to help the community. Ironically, it's also Boeing who wants people to be afraid of the good cleanup. And they've done quite a bit of work with these AstroTurf groups, spreading fear in the community. They're afraid of dust. They're afraid of trucks. So it's a shame because there are safe methods, and we know what they are. It's just the DTSC won't consider them into their formal plan.
And what can our incoming governor, Gavin Newsom, do about this? Can he take responsibility on this, or is there some issues around that as well?
We're actually hoping that he'll intervene even before he is properly governor. Last year, the Department of Substances Control released a draft environmental impact report for this site that is absolutely terrible. It proposes leaving up to 90% of the contamination on site, and we need Gavin Newsom to step in now and make sure that that is not finalized before he's in place. He's got his team in place so that they don't codify really bad choices. There'll be more public comment periods after that, but if those bad choices are finalized, it makes it a lot harder to undo.
And where can people get more information, make sure they get on your mailing list, but also take some action?
Oh, we have www.change.org/SantaSusanna. We keep everyone updated about who we're meeting with, what things are happening. I would also say that SSFLworkgroup.org has all the EPA reports, all the epidemiological studies. It's all very public there to learn more about.
Thank you, both of you. Thank you, Denise Duffield and Melissa Bumstead, for being in the studio today and sharing your experiences. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you to our listeners for joining us. This has been EcoJustice Radio on 90.7 KPFK.
And that is it for our show. Thank you for tuning in to Eco Justice Radio here on 90.7 KPFK. I want to thank Denise and Melissa for coming on to the show. Eco Justice Radio is brought to you by SoCal 350 and KPFK. Executive producer Mark Morris, interview hosted by Jessica Aldridge, and original music by Javier Cadre. My name is JP Morris, and until next time, remember, the power is yours.